This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And it's also the place where the BoucherCon 2018 convention is being held, and it is a convention for mystery writers, and it is going to be exciting. We have, I think, over 1,500 people coming here to St. Petersburg and the Clearwater area, so it's really exciting. And I'm so happy today I have two of the participants in the convention with me today. First, at the bottom of the hour, I'm going to be talking to Edwin Hill about his debut mystery called Little Comfort. It is fantastic. It is about a librarian. And as everybody knows, I like to read, and I was the president of my library club in high school. And so I am eager to talk to Edwin. But first, I'm going to talk to L.A. Chandler. Sometimes you get an author whose book you really love, and then sometimes you get a author who you just love the author. And I am so happy to have L.A. Chandler with me today. Hi. Are you there?
Hi. Okay. I'm here, and I'm so happy to be here, too.
Well, I guess I can call you Lori, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, I'm privileged. Okay. Everybody else can call.
They can call me Lori, too. That's fine.
Or they can call you L.A., and then they'll call you Lala, and maybe
exactly.
Then...
Exactly.
And then maybe they'll call you a valley girl, which I hear. I might get a little fun of having, you know, a valley girl on today. You are a woman of many, many, many talents.
Yes, that's a nice hidden one. That's not so hidden anymore.
Well, I don't know. I think it's fun. I always thought that was a fun period. If you want to throw in any of the terminology, ahead.
Well, what had happened was in college, I was doing an interview for a video, and someone had asked me if I liked a particular class. I said, and I'm from Michigan originally, so I've got no Valley Girl voice in me at all. And suddenly I'm like, oh, I love that class. So funny. And so my boyfriend at the time, now husband, was just like, where did that come from? Where did that come from? So every interview
I've
ever done from that time is like, you gonna let the Valley Girl out? Like,
well, no, you know, I'm a Michigander too. And
I know, I read.
So it's so funny. It's something we all dream about, to be Valley Girls.
Yeah, okay. Totally.
Well, the new book, of course, is called The Gold Pawn, and it is a part of what is a wonderful series called the Art Deco series. And your last book, your first book, which was in the series, The Silver Gun, was fantastic. And this new book.
Thank
you. Oh, wow. It is.
Thank you. I'm so glad.
First of all, you have everything there, you know, because of course you have Detroit, and I was raised in Detroit. Although I'm a Youper, I'm from the Upper Peninsula.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little south for me, but, you know, I was raised there, so I love anything. I always read anything that's got Detroit in it. Then Art Deco, because I'm a bit of an artist myself. And then, my favorite city, New York City, and really my favorite period. I just love that era that
that's
you're writing
so
about.
So, oh, I'm so glad.
Wow, you have to tell us how you came out with the idea, and of course the entire the character, everything. Just talk to us.
Sure. Well, you know, I'm an avid reader. I've always read a lot, even in the most busy periods of my life. I'm always reading, even if it's just for 10 minutes before I go to bed at night, if I could just squeeze in that. So I had always dreamed of being an author. I've always been a writer of articles and speeches and things like that, but I moved to New York just shortly after 9/11, And I saw firsthand how a city handles tremendous adversity. And it was really surprising. The city was very compassionate, extremely artistic at the time, too, and it always is. But that was part of how they were healing, too. And then also cocktails. And so I happened to pick up a book on Fiorella LaGuardia. And I actually don't read a lot of biographies, but for some reason that just really stuck out to me. And he had been mayor throughout the 30s, right when the country was truly suffering from the Depression. And it was so similar to what we had been going on right then and there. And it was so surprising because I think it was an era that I had always pigeonholed into being just about the Depression, the soup lines, the Dust Bowl, you know, Grapes of Wrath, you know, that kind of thing. But what had been underrepresented, in my opinion, was the gritty humor, the art, this tremendous architecture that was going on, the dance, the music, and the politics and strong women rising in the workforce that I thought had happened more during World War II. But it was in the 30s. So I had this whole different view of the 30s than what I'd had before. And I loved it even more because the art and the beauty was even in the midst of all that adversity, which is always going to be a constant theme in probably almost everything I write, but certainly in the Art Deco mystery series. So that's how that came about. And that's also how Fiorella LaGuardia is known as probably one of the greatest American mayors ever. And I've heard about him, of course, because of LaGuardia Airport. And I knew about him because of the LaGuardia High School for the Arts, the fame school. But other than that, I hadn't really known much. And I love him, and he's so funny.
He is.
I thought he would be the best character in a book because there's so much real material to work with. So that's how he came into play. And I really wanted the protagonist to be a woman because I really wanted to feature these amazing women that were in the 30s. They're making strides in the midst of a man's world. And so the protagonist is his aide. So he's one of the main characters, and then they, of course, have a whole troop of characters to go with the backstory. But that's the general gist of how it came about.
Well, I really enjoy Lane Sanders. You've given her a great backstory. And now, you know, with her position, you're right there with the mayor. She gets to be part of all this. Well, in many ways, so much fun because he was fun. And, you know, we look back and we say, well, he was really outrageous. But, boy, it worked.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. In fact, you really have to read. I always say this pretty much anytime I speak anywhere. You have to read my author notes because some of this stuff sounds crazy, like over the top, funny, or, you know, total publicity stunt, especially where he's involved. And it sounds like I made it up. But I can guarantee you the crazier the stunt, probably the more real history it was. So in my author notes, I always say, like, what happened, what was real, you know, what I made up, and that kind of thing. Because that's the part that, again, that history that I don't think, especially the humor part, we tend to overlook that. And it's such a great part of our humanity, you know?
Oh, it is. And I do love that you have the notes there because I always like to encourage people, you know, once you read a book and you sort of get into that milieu and you get interested in it, just keep going with it. Read other things and go deeper into the period and get really to know it. And certainly you touch on so many things with the parts about Detroit, which are fascinating.
Yeah.
People who don't know Detroit will find that it so interesting. And then, of course, just the music and the art at that period, it was so incredible.
It was. And it really... it has this inspiring heart to it all that just is always compelling to me. And Detroit, I've always loved Detroit. And then my family grew up there, so I've had stories. And I feel like it's been underrepresented, too, because of the difficulties that they've had over the years. Instead of looking at some of the more...
the wonderful thing.
Parts that were part of it.
You know, it's so funny. I will tell people, you know, about my childhood, and I will say, it was just fantastic. I lived in Detroit, and they'll look at me and they'll say, what? And I say, well, you don't understand. It was so beautiful. The houses were so great. The tree-lined streets and the libraries and the metro and the museum and the, you know, all the theaters we had. It was fantastic.
Yep. Right. Right, absolutely. And also, I'm just trying to give people these glimpses. That's one of my favorite things, is taking nuances of history. Because I always felt like, I like history, but I think when we're in school, we learn it in pockets. So we learn about, like, the sort of...
Oh, they kill it. They kill it.
And they kill the, funk of it.
Oh, they do. They take out all the fun.
Yeah, and I think you don't realize all the interesting things that were going on at the same time, too. So that's why I love putting in, I have lots of cameo appearances, I have lots of interesting things about the time period that you probably don't even realize. And so I love that part. And that's why I like the history part of Detroit, where talking a little bit about that feel of, you know, you, when you wanted something built at that time, you went to Detroit. That was where it happened. You know, that's where you made your dreams come true with that. And then even the parts in New York that were going on, and there's like a famous ride on a Zeppelin that happens in the book, and lots of stuff like that, that I feel like we just learned these one little piece of tidbit here and there, and not realizing, no, that's part of the tapestry of their culture, you know, on an everyday basis.
Well, I think you have just captured it so beautifully, and you weave it all in here with a very, you know, nice mystery too. So it just, the whole thing just flows. And I thought, whoa, as I was reading it, I said, oh, I just like her so much. I just like her. I think she's so good. And I you know, when I love when you talk about buildings, and I think that's so important, just to appreciate the architecture of New York. And of course, I'm a great lover of Central Park. And can you imagine how terrible New York would be without Central Park? It makes you shiver to think if Frederick Law Olmsted hadn't gotten his hands on that piece of land, what would have happened to New York?
Exactly. It really is the heart of the city. And I think that's where a lot of all of us go to get rejuvenated, to be together. There's this really interesting energy there that is from, I think, all the people there. I've been to parks all over the country, but a lot of parks are not very populated. And when there's people around, there's this great energy, and there's always art all around you, from people that are just a private artist, and they're painting a landscape, to a jazz band that pops up on this corner or that corner. And it's beautiful. And I love all those elements, you know, of the life there.
And I think that the way you've weaved it in and just brought it all to life, anybody who's been to New York will say, whoa. And when you go the next time, you'll say, wow, I'm seeing it with a different eye, because I'm now seeing it as L.A. Chandler saw it. and that enthusiasm for the city, which I think is, I was talking to you know, Lawrence Block, and he's going to be, of course, here at BoucherCon. And of course, his books are almost all set in New York, and he's also a great lover of New York City. He makes his part of New York City come alive, and so that's why it's always been one of my favorite subjects. I will read any book that's set in New York, because
I love it. Well, I had no idea that I would love it so much. You know, a lot of people have in mind sometimes, of, you know, this dream that they want to go to New York and live there one day. It was not on my radar at all, ever. And then suddenly my husband had gotten offered a job opportunity, and then I did. And then we were like, you know, what's the worst that could happen? Let's move. The more we thought about it, the more we got excited about it. Neither of us had ever lived in a big city. And then we're like, the worst that can happen, we can always move back to the suburbs. They will be waiting for us. And so we're like, let's go. And I figure most people, their biggest regret in life is not the mistakes they made, but the risks they didn't take. And I felt like I would rather live with going and then having not liked it and just move back. And hey, at least it was an adventure, it was a try, whatever, versus not doing it at all. And so now I'm coming up to living here 17 years. And it was one of those things that when I moved, I felt like, oh my God, I've been looking for this place my whole life, and I had no idea.
Well,
I just love it.
I think you've captured it in your books, and I love that you are so involved in creativity. And
thank you.
Your blog is excellent, and the way that you encourage people to find what is the joy of being creative.
Thank you. Yeah, I had kind of stumbled upon that myself because, again, being an author wasn't really on my horizon. And, of course, I get this really fabulous idea of this novel I want to write right when I move to a new city. I have no friends or family. I've started a new job. And then we decide to start having children. So, sure, why not? Let's do a novel, too. So I had a really hard time figuring out how to do it when life was complicated. And I was trying to figure out how to do it. And do I do it in small increments or whatever? So I just tried to do some research while I could. I have newborns around now and all this kind of stuff. So I could at least do research. And then I started thinking about it. And then I was like, you know, if I keep waiting for the perfect time or where I have the perfect amount of energy, the space, the time, the money to go ahead and write this book, I'm never going to do it. So I started writing, I decided that I would do small chunks of time, but really consistently. And so I started off with just 2 hours a week. I figured I could hire a babysitter for 2 hours. It wouldn't kill anybody, and I would just do it consistently. And when you do small bits like that consistently, it does two really strong things. It builds appetite for more, and your work compounds. And so I started writing a scene, and then suddenly five chapters, and then, you know, I just kept going. And then I ended up finishing a book. And so I'd even gotten kind of laughed at about that because I had a couple people in my life that were just acquaintances, but they were like, you're never going to write a book that way. Like, you need to wait until you have a 10-week beach retreat before you can write your novel. And I was like, are you out of your mind? Never going to happen. What you're telling me to do is not do it.
Well, I think that's great. That's exactly the attitude that you should have and that creative people should have. Don't put it off. It's funny. I did yesterday just a little thing on my Facebook. I said, it's Wednesday. You know, you didn't start your book last weekend and you're thinking about starting it next weekend, but why wait? Just start. Just do it. Just grab that moment as often as you can. And it's amazing what you can accomplish.
Exactly. That's what I think, too. And I feel like that's where the whole creativity and encouraging other people came from, because I was having so much fun. I had no idea how life-giving it would be, even in the midst of a really busy life, because I think art has that capacity. Even if you're not, you don't think you're a creative person. This is a lot of what I do, some different corporate classes and workshops on the psychology of creativity, so figuring that out in the workplace. And then in you personally, and so even people that would say they're not creative, it's just not true. Just because you're not easily labeled creative, like you're a painter or you're a dancer or something, doesn't mean you're not creative. And so how does it work in you? And that's what why it came out was I was having so much fun when I was reading or writing more seriously. And people would ask me, my friends, they'd say, gosh, you look so excited. What's going on? And I would share. Oh, I was taking writing more seriously and
In other words, a little segue. What? Perhaps we could say that you have found the joy on paper.
Exactly. And I got to say, when I saw your tagline of joy on paper, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is such, I still want to do this. This is just perfect. I love that. How did you even come up with that?
Well, because that's how I feel. I feel that it's a combination. It's a joy on paper of writing, and it's also that joy on paper that readers get when they read something.
Yes.
And they get so excited sometimes. You know, if you read something, and I know when people read your book, they're going to say, whoa, 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 whoa. And I felt the joy. As I'm reading your books, I feel your joy in your subject matter and in the process of writing.
Well, that's the best compliment I could ever get, Betsy. Thank you so much.
Well, I think you're delightful. I want to make sure that I tell you right now that I want you back in December, because I want you back here to talk about the history of holiday traditions, which you have done a lot of work on.
I have. I love that so much.
Okay, so we're going to plan for you to be back here in the first week of December, and we'll have...
Got it.
Okay, and meanwhile, what about BoucherCon?
Yes, I will be there. So it's a week from today it starts. I'll be there pretty much the whole Thursday to Sunday. Thursday on a panel at 2 for historical mysteries. And then on Saturday morning, I'm part of the author speed dating round, which is hilarious. It's so much fun. You meet all these authors. Every author has like 2 minutes to stare at each table. True speed dating. It's hysterical. And then I'm also doing Kensington has a signing at 2 o'clock on Saturday on the mezzanine at the Vinoy. So it should be a lot of fun. I love that conference.
It is going to be fun. I'm going to be in the audience for your panel. And we'll meet and we get to talk to Michiganders who have both found the joy on paper and love to share it with readers. We want more people to read, and I hope all of my listeners out there, please come out to the Vinoy and please come to the Kensington area, because Kensington, they are fantastic people, aren't they?
They are. They're a wonderful team. Very inspiring and very competent and can answer all my questions. I'm a learner, so I'm always asking them lots of questions.
Well, they do. They have a great eye. They always come out with wonderful covers.
Christine did such a good job on my covers.
I mean,
love them.
They are fantastic because they really evoke what the book is going to be about. So they, right from the minute you put that book in your hand, you're ready. You're ready for this experience. And so, Lori, I think you're a fantastic author. I'm so very, very happy that I got to talk to you today in advance of BoucherCon, because I want people to come and see you and get your books. And you have a website you want people to go to?
Sure, just lachandler.com. And I have all my events. I've got blogs on there. And I really do love to encourage writers. I'm on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, too, just under L.A. Chandler. And definitely drop me a line. And a lot of authors on Twitter, we're all encouraging each other. It's very surprising how the authors that I'm in contact with in the mystery world are so supportive. And I love that. And I just feel like that makes the industry even stronger.
Absolutely.
There's room for all of us.
Exactly. Well, again, thank you so much for joining me today on Joy on Paper. I will see you next week here in St. Petersburg. And everybody, go and check out Lori's, L.A. Chandler's webpage. And it's Chandler spelled with an L-A-R at the end, A-R. But it's there, and it's wonderful. Your blog is great. So look forward to seeing you next week, okay?
Thanks so much for having me, Patsy.
Okay, bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Okay, she's fantastic. I just enjoy her book so much. Now, we're going to have a little bit of a book buzz with Rita Moreau, and because Rita is going to be also at the BoucherCon, and as Lori said here, the Kensington people are going to be having an event on Saturday at 2 o'clock, and it is a wonderful opportunity for you to meet all the Kensington authors who are fantastic, and to see their books and to get just to get to know them better, because one of our local authors, Carol J. Perry, will be there. She, of course, is a Kensington author. Her books have been featured many, many times on the end cap display at Barnes & Noble. And I love Carol J. Perry. She's got a new book coming out at the end of September. She's going to be here to talk about it. And then we have more to do with that. Do we have a book buzz ready? Okay, we're going to do a book buzz, then we'll come back.
This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest book buzz mystery. Today we are buzzing about book number 10 in the Jonathan Graves thriller series by New York Times bestselling author John Gilstrap. I love the title, Scorpion Strike. Here's the buzz. Jonathan Grave and Gail Bonneville thought the Crystal Sands Resort was a perfect getaway until this island paradise is held hostage by a band of dangerous killers. Guests are awakened in the middle of the night by gunshots and yanked out of their sleep by their captors. But Jonathan and Gail are no ordinary vacationers, and the assassins who invade their bungalow are in for a deadly surprise. They will soon discover two determined and skilled operatives who have escaped escaped into the jungle. Cut off from his usual tactical team, Grave's only hope is bold action. Like a scorpion, Grave must strike fast and strike hard. Yowzer! Readers, what you might not know about the author is that he is a renowned safety expert with extensive knowledge of explosives, hazardous materials, and fire behavior. Hot, hot, hot! Hey, fans of Jack Reacher and my favorite, Joe Pike, Scorpion Strike by John Gilstrap will not disappoint. This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper. For more on my suggestions on the mysteries you should not miss, go to our webpage, www.radio-joyonpaper.com, and click on Book Buzz. That's radio-joy on paper. Rita Moreau, buzzing off for now.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep sleep faster and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry MyPillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever.
MyPillow is now offering 50% off their 4-pack special.
Support Joy on Paper and local authors. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code PATSY, P-A-T-Z-I, or call 1-800-871-1543. That's 800-871-1543.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my next guest, Edwin Hill. Whoa, I'm having a great day today. Two authors whose books I got into, and it was difficult to get out of. So I am so happy to have Edwin here to talk today about Little Comfort, a Hester Thursby mystery. It is the first in a series that I know is going to be really great. Hi, Edwin.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Well, as I said, this is going to be a great series. First of all, the character is a librarian. Now, as the president of the library club in my high school, you can imagine that I'm one of those people who loves libraries. As a matter of fact, the one thing, every town, every city I went to, I traveled a great deal. First place I would go to was a library. I always wanted to see a local library. So I was really thrilled when I discovered this wonderful new character that you have developed who is going to really capture so many readers, because once you get to know her, everybody will want to know more. So tell us about how you came out with Hester Thursby.
Sure. So Hester, as you said, she's a librarian. She works for Widener Library at Harvard. I've been talking about this a lot, and it's really interesting to think about the evolution of a first novel, because you can spend a long time with a first novel because absolutely nobody is waiting for it, right? So when I first started writing this book, Hester wasn't the central character in it. There's another character in the story whose name is Sam Blaine. He's actually named after my friend's beagle. And Sam is sort of an anti-hero. He's sort of like a Tom Ripley, Patricia Highsmith type character. And I really got into this story in the late 2000s when the whole Clark Rockefeller thing was happening. And I just thought that was a really fascinating story. And I wrote a scene with this character, Sam Blaine, who was charming and handsome and could get away with anything. And then I didn't know if it was going to go anywhere. And it just kind of sat on my computer for a little while. And then as I started to develop the story out, I realized that he needed a strong character who could be a foil for him, who could sort of match his wits. This winds up being sort of a cat and mouse story. And so Hester was sort of born out of that. How she became to be started to be a librarian, I kind of experimented with different careers that that she could take, but I wanted someone who'd be very curious. And for me, librarians are among the most curious people that you meet on a day-to-day basis. They're constantly solving big and small mysteries for their clients and helping people think things through. And I just thought that would be an interesting take on a mystery novel.
And I was thinking, oh boy, at the big library. librarian convention when they select novels to buy for the library, thinking, oh boy, they are going to put Edwin's book right there.
Well, that would be nice, wouldn't it?
I was saying to myself, now that's clever, because how do you, when, authors want so much for the libraries to pick up their books, because that's a nice sale, nice big sale. Yep. And I thought, How do you, really entice them? And I thought, well, Edwin has discovered it. He's come out with a life, as you describe it. Why, I don't know, but 4'9" librarian. It's so funny. They are going to just launch on this novel so fast, because it's great, and the series is going to be fun. And it's nice that you plan for a series, because I think this is the kind of book that you really, it gives you so much opportunity to start sort of at one level and then build up, and just with a few hints, I think we can see that it's got a long run.
Thank you. Yeah, I started this as a series on purposely. Once I had sort of figured out that Hester was going to be the main character of the whole series, that was really when I was able to start developing that. I love mystery series. I love series where you have just like TV shows. I love TV as well, where you have characters that develop, have a story arc that both develops within the novel itself. You can read all of the novels on their own, but also over time, so you can see someone grow and change over the course of a series. So that's really what my goal is here. I think there were some really good questions that were posed in this novel that I think will keep readers wanting to come back for the second and hopefully the third book as well.
And it's not a cozy mystery in the sense, there's a lot of, there's psychology, there's a little bit of creepiness. I mean, it's got everything in this book. And so it really gives you a lot of things to work with in the future.
Thank you. Yeah, I would actually caution anyone who really loves cozies and only likes cozies, this is probably not the book for you. It does have some violence and sex in it.
That's why I mentioned it, because I do have a whole bunch of listeners who are just cozy mystery readers. Okay, that's all, but they don't want any violence. So I say, but it's not gratuitous. what you have in there is necessary, and I think you have a wide audience for this book, because the psychological and suspense mysteries are so hot right now. And one of the reasons, of course, people gravitate to them, I think there's something, it takes you away from the real world and into a world that at least has some control. And I think with Hester, you've come out with just a character that we want to know more about.
Thank you.
And I think it was funny. I noticed on your website you mentioned something when I wake, it just tickled me so much. You mentioned that you knew where you were when you read Agatha Christie's The Seven Dials Mystery.
Yes. I think this is something that a lot of mystery novelists do. We spend our adolescence reading Agatha Christie, or at least they did when people my age did. When I was, I'm trying to figure out the exact age. I think I was 11 years old. My family, we used to go on these month-long family camping trips. All four of us lined up in a tent. They were really fun. And my parents would take us all over the United States, all over Canada. And I remember very distinctly, I'd run out of books on this trip, and we were on our way to Mount Rushmore, and we stopped at a gas station and picked up a copy of Agatha Christie's The Seven Dials Mystery. And that was my first exposure to her. That was my first exposure to sort of an adult novel, an adult mystery. And I was just riveted by the story. The Seven Dials Mystery, if you haven't read it, is one of her earlier books. So it's set in the 20s. You still have all of the glamour of the 20s and of the manor houses. And I just loved the intricate storytelling that she brought to that. And I was, the end just dumbfounded me. I couldn't believe how surprised I was by the ending of that story. And when I put that book down, I thought to myself, this is exactly what I want to do with my life. And it only took me 35 years to teach myself how to do it.
Yeah, in between you had a real world career, I suppose people would say, but
yes.
I hope that I'm glad that it has now given you the time so that you can have the pleasure and the leisure to sit and really write this wonderful new series. But it's, I do actually remember why I found it so funny is I remember where I was when I first read The Seven Dials Mystery.
And where were you?
I was at a house, my friend's house, and it was one of those wonderful old Victorian houses where she had a window box, and you know where you could sit and pull the curtain, and you would sit in the window, and that's where I was when I read that book, and I loved it so much. And there's a character in there, her name is Bundles. And
yes.
I loved Bundles so much, and I wanted people to call me Bundles. I just liked that. I just thought that was so cute. And I just love, and of course I'm crazy about Agatha Christie, and I think every mystery lover has to be. And so it's just so funny. I thought, when I can remember where I was when I read that book. And
well, I was up in the back of a Jeep Bronco that didn't have air conditioning. It was about 100 degrees out, so I like your setting better.
Well, you know, it is just wonderful. This is what I was talking. You know, I had before you, I had L.A. Chandler on, and she's going to be here at BoucherCon. And she's another author who has really found this joy that I talk about, the joy of seeing your words on paper. It is such a wonderful feeling. So for you coming out with your first novel, this is an exciting time.
Oh, it's an amazing time. Last night I had a launch here in Boston. I'm in Boston right now. I had a launch here in Boston at the Boston Brookline Booksmith, which is one of the really great bookstores here in Boston. We had I think there were 86 people who showed up. We sold out of books. I mean, it was just, you know, I couldn't have imagined a more successful evening. And it was great to just be able to talk to people about what I've been working on for all of these years. This has been I think I started this book in 2008. It may have been a little bit earlier, maybe a little bit later. I really got started on it in earnest at the end of 2010, and it took me, you know, working in between, you know, working the whole time at a full-time job. It took me about 4 years to write it. And then the publishing process is such that it's coming out, you know, it came out 2 days ago. And it's something I've thought about for many years and something I've dreamed about for many years, and it's just very rewarding to have it happen in real life.
And we hope that you're working on the second book, right? You are.
Well, I'm happy to tell you I've turned over the second book. I turned that over at the end of June, and I'm working on a proposal for a third book right now.
Well, that's a wonderful thing. That first one takes a long time to get born, but then after that, when it's as good as your book, Then the publishers keep saying, okay, every year you're going to have another baby here.
Yeah. Well, it was so different to work on the second book. I mean, when you're working on a first book, the only motivation is yourself, right? Nobody's asking for it. Nobody needs to see it. Second book, very different. There's a deadline. There's an editor. There are expectations. And it was equally as thrilling to work on under a deadline like that.
And of course, you're working with one of the best groups of people. The Kensington people are so well known for being so supportive of their authors, coming out with everything, just having that feel for when they find an author that they feel they can run with, they run with them.
Mm-hmm. They have been, I can't say enough about the Kensington folks, from my editor to the publicity and marketing people, everyone. They have been, they're like a great family. They're very welcoming, and they're so supportive of every project that comes out, mine included.
Well, now for this book and for all of your books, what do you like to do? Do you like the research part? Are you a plotter, planner?
You
just run
that was
with it.
Interesting. So there are two, people say there are two different types of writers. There are panthers and plotters, right? So for the first book, I was like the quintessential panther. That means that you just make it up as you go along. As I said, when we first started talking, I mean, Hester was barely even in the story when I first started, and now she's the main character. So I found for the second book, because I was under such a tight deadline, and I have a very demanding full-time job that takes most of my time, I really needed to be I needed to plan very carefully and make sure that I had things to do when I was writing and that I could accomplish those things. So I did a very extensive outline for that one to just keep me on track throughout the entire process. So I guess I'm sort of a balance of both of them. I think in an ideal world, I'd be more of a pantser, but sometimes necessity makes you do things.
So tell me, now BoucherCon is your first big event?
I went to BoucherCon last year in Toronto, which was fantastic, and started and met a bunch of people. I had a story in Ellery Queen Mystery Magazine, which I recorded with Janet Hutchins there, and so that was my first foray into the mystery conferences. And so I'll be coming down this time, and it'll be my first conference as an actual published author. So that is an exciting moment.
Oh, it is going to be wonderful. I know that Kensington is going to have a big event on Saturday at 2 o'clock, and many of my listeners are going to be coming down because they've already...
Excellent.
I've been at a couple of meetings recently for readers, because what I like to do is I try to meet readers, people who at libraries and women's clubs and other types of events like that, because I want to share my enthusiasm for an author so that they start to feel that, whoa, I have to read this author. And so I've been talking already about this book because, as I said, of course, as the president of my library club, I have this affinity to librarians and to libraries in general. I just love libraries. And,
I think as an author, it's really important that you're always looking to connect with readers. And, if a reader finds this book through a library, awesome. If they buy it at the bookstore, that's fantastic, too. And if they listen to it on Audible, that's fantastic, too. But really, I want people to be – I wrote this story so that people can experience it, and I want them to experience it in the way that they can.
And, did you like – hearing your book in an Audible version, did you listen to it?
I haven't listened to the whole thing, but yes. I mean, it was amazing to hear. Let me just look up the name of the person who did it. She did a great job. She did she did fantastic voices for all of the characters. She really paid attention to what the story was saying about everyone. Her name's Karen White, and she's a great actress, and she did just a wonderful job. And I especially love Hester's voice. Hester has a very low, throaty voice, and she did a great job with that one. And there's also, in this story, Hester is sort of stuck raising a three-year-old niece that she is a little ambivalent about. And there are a lot of scenes where Hester and Kate are having conversations with each other. And so it was great to hear Karen go from this low, throaty voice to a three-year-old child's voice so effortlessly.
Well, it's so exciting. I always love to talk to an author when they're first book comes out, because then I can watch over the years as things progress. And I remember when I first started this program, one of my first interviews was with a local author, Carol J. Perry, who is also with Kensington. And it was her first book. And then since then, like you, she got a contract and then she got another contract. And she's now in full-time mode of writing books, and she's now up to her number 8 coming out here in September. You will be meeting her. She will be at the Kensington, and she's on a panel, of course, and she will be with all the Kensington people. And it's just wonderful to be able to watch an author progress through the years.
Well, I appreciate that, and I look forward to book number 8 coming out and being on your radio program.
Well, you know, it's just so much fun for me to find an author whose work I really love, and just to feel that I can help in a small way to get your name out there, and for people to just find that joy of sitting down and reading. As a matter of fact, I have to warn people about this. Do not read Edwin's book if you have to go somewhere and do something, because you don't want to stop. You just want to sit there and keep turning those pages. And it's one of those books. Every once in a while, I get a book that takes me. You know, I don't want to do anything else for the day, which is very difficult. But it's wonderful. So that's one of the things about your book.
Well, Patsy, you just made my day.
Well, I'm excited that you're going to be here. I will be seeing you there. I will be attending all the events and just having fun meeting. You know, the wonderful thing about mysteries, I think, is that they do take you out of sort of the everyday news. You can just maybe turn off the television and just immerse yourself in a really good mystery.
That's my favorite thing about reading, just that ability to escape into someone else's world and to see what someone can create with words. So I'm always amazed by every book I read. I'm amazed by anyone who's written any book and is able to finish it. So
exactly. Well, I think, as you know and I know, that Agatha Christie has inspired so many writers and so many readers to continue that path of just immersing yourself and having fun reading, because it really is one of the joys of life, is to be able to read. And I want everybody to appreciate that and to understand that, you know, just grab a book and get into another world, and then maybe you will be inspired, like Edwin here, to actually write a book.
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Well, Edwin, thank you again so much for joining me today on Joy on Paper, and I look forward to seeing you. The Vinoy Hotel is fantastic. I don't know if you've ever been here before.
No, I'm really looking forward to it, and now, I can't wait to meet you in person.
Oh, and I tell you, of all the places in the world to have a convention, this is perhaps the best place, because it is so beautiful, and the hotel is so wonderful, and all of the area around the hotel is just fantastic, just walking, and we have perfect weather, wonderful, wonderful time of the year to be here. And so I'm just so thrilled that we got BoucherCon for our area. So we're looking forward to seeing you here, okay?
Fantastic. I'll see you next Thursday or
thereafter. We'll see. Probably we'll run into each other quite a few times over the course of the event. But again, thank you so much for joining me on Joy on Paper today, Edwin. I almost forgot. You have a web page.
I do. It's Edwin, Edwin-Hill, edwinhill.com.
Okay.
Edwinhill.com.
Yeah,
just
because
don't forget the dash.
Yeah, don't forget the dash, because there's another Edwin Hill who's an author, but he writes a lot of different kind of books.
Exactly.
And so it's Edwin-Hill, and it's wonderful. And there's all the information about you and about the book. And I think you started a series that we're going to I'm going to have you back next year. I know you already have the second one with the editors, and we'll have you back here next year. Okay?
I look forward to it.
Okay. Bye-bye now, Edwin.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Wow. He is nice. I like him, and I like this book. I like Hester Thursby, 4'9" librarian. She will just... You will find her fascinating, and over the years, I'm sure we're going to see many, many books from Edwin, because this is the joy, really, of an author, when you actually find a character like Agatha Christie found Miss Marple, or Hercule Poirot, or whoever you find, and they become part of you. They become part of your sort of inner body, inner soul. And then you can just sit down and write about them, because you know them so well. You know what they think. You know what they're going to do. You know what they eat. You know, it's just fun to have this extra person. And in a normal sense of the word, I mean, you don't want a split personality, but you like to have an extra person in your head who is somebody that you. You must like them if you put them in your head. So it's just part of the fun of being a writer. Now, make sure that, please, everybody go to BoucherCon 2018. It's Boucher, B-O-U-C-H-E-R, 2018. And Boucher was an author who... also a mystery writer, and the event is named after him. But there will be so many wonderful authors there. Lee Child, Lawrence Block, Jill Block, Ace Atkins. They're all going to be there. Everybody's going to be there. And, of course, many of our local authors are going to be there. You'll get to meet. If you come there, you can meet Rita Moreau, who we call around here Radio Rita. And she's going to be there. And, of course, she does the book buzzes for us, and we appreciate that so much. And also, one of the things that's happening over the course of the next few months is I'm going to be bringing back quite a few literary agents, because we want to learn more about how to get that query letter finally done and over with, and get away from the nervousness of preparing a query letter and feeling really relaxed about it. So I want to bring in about three or four agents who will just talk to you about query letters, because you have to write your book and then you have to query it. So we will be talking to agents about that. But meanwhile, remember, as my guest said today, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them in an audible book. Or if you're very, very lucky, to someday have somebody in Hollywood pick it up and then you will hear the words. Cameras, light, action, and somebody will be filming your book. And it will be on the big screen or perhaps in the little screen. Like I know Carol J. Perry's books will be on Hallmark Channel someday. I am determined that I will see Carol J. Perry's books on Hallmark Channel. Okay, everybody, have a great, great weekend. Bye-bye now, and just say something nice to somebody. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. He's saluting me. I'm saluting him. Bye-bye, everybody.